on Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA. It's The Buzz with Dr. Z, supported by the Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania. Dr. Z is Dr. George Lupko, founder and director of the foundation. Now, here's WRTA's Doug Herentine and Dr. George Lupko.
Good afternoon once again, and a reminder that if you are interested in having any questions answered on this program in future, doug@leitnerradio.com, and we'll get them to Dr. George Lupko, who joins us now. Sir, welcome once again.
How you doing, Doug? Nice to see you again. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, and also this time of year, just so we could remind people, and you've mentioned this in some of your other announcements that run on WRTA, if you hadn't had a flu shot yet, get it and check with your doctor about whatever else you may need for a vaccination this time of year.
Yeah, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I always say that. And it's I didn't think of it, though. Ben Franklin said it first, but I've stolen it. I use it myself.
Well, maybe he saw it on Facebook and just copied it.
He might have.
Yeah. And as far as future suggestions for topics, we can take those too also at that particular email. You can find that information and other links about this program will be up on a podcast later at WRTA.com, and Dr. Zlupko will have them as well on his website. What are we going to be talking about today? This is a bit different than what we've done in the past.
Well, it is, Doug, and I know this is a very festive time of year, or it's going to be a festive time of year. We're going to have a lot of parties and people getting together, but it just seems that this time of year there are always some things that happen that aren't so nice, and life goes on. And so I thought this might be a good time to talk about a service that many people may have some misconceptions about, and that's hospice care. And I have some special guests with me today, as you know, and I'll talk about them in just a few minutes. But I thought I'd just kind of introduce some history about hospice care, which most people I don't think know about.
I think that a lot of people have heard the term, and until they have had a loved one go through it, they may not understand what hospice even is.
That's right. And my guests are going to talk about that in just a few minutes. But the word hospice, the derivation of the word hospice, actually comes from a Latin word called hospitium. And hospitium meant a guest house, a house for guests. Over time, and particularly starting around in the 11th century or so, the Roman Catholic Church took that term and made it into little guest houses that they would have around the country, around Rome. They had pilgrims and things like that going on. And so pilgrims would come to these places called hospice houses. And then they started to become places where people who were infirmed and having illness would reside as well. So that's how it got started. But the modern concept of hospice began in about the 20th century, okay? There was someone by the name of Dame Cecilia Saunders, and I don't know if you've ever heard about Dame Cecilia Saunders, you may have, but she founded the St. Christopher's Hospice, which was in London in 1967. And this was focused on palliative care, and that's really where we started all this modern hospice business.
End of life care,
basically. Basically, it is. Let me take a minute here and introduce my guests here. I have two of them. One that we had scheduled and it was on the promo, and then a very special guest who decided to come with him today. And I'm happy to have her here. First of all, Mr. Don Martin, the community education representative for a hospice agency known as 365, and Lacey Carfley, who's a registered nurse and a case manager for the same agency. And Don, it's nice to have you here. I was just wondering, before we talk about hospice and what it does, how did you get into this? What's your background, and how did you decide to devote some of your life to this service?
Sure, George. Dr. George, I've been in healthcare for about 30 years, and actually was able to start within this agency back in 2012. So a little over 13 years. Hospice in healthcare is the highest tier of nursing services that one can get prior to going back into a hospital setting. So it's really beneficial and rewarding for all the families and certainly our employees.
Okay, well, that's great. And Lacey, you're a registered nurse, so I'm sure you in your career had other things that you were doing. How did you come to do hospice care? What prompted you to do that?
Well, I've been a registered nurse since 2002, and I started with 365 Hospice in 2018. Thought it would be a nice change of pace. Had done several different, some home care, long-term care, labor and delivery, but I wish I would have done hospice much sooner. It's really where my heart lies.
Okay, great. So, Don, tell us a little bit about what hospice care is, and certainly from your perspective, of course, but what is hospice care, and just give us an idea about what goes on with that.
Sure. Hospice care in general has both the family and the patient in mind. The whole care is, as far as the patient is coming into us with all kinds of different symptoms, diagnosis, that they have to qualify into that service. The families join in, and they're very much supported by our entire team. In hospice, it's a team of professionals. It's the our in-case manager, my partner Lacey here next to me. It's also the home health aide. It's our chaplain. It's our medical social worker. So, and bereavement coordinator. So there's quite a few folks actually that are involved in the team effort to support both family and patient.
Well, I understand that hospice is more than just a service. It's really a philosophy of care.
Yes.
And Doug, I think this is something that our listeners really need to know. It's not just a service, but it's a philosophy of care. And Don here, being the education representative for this local and regional agency, 365, would be providing some of that. He would be providing that education to families, talking to them about what to expect, what hospice care is, how it helps to ease the burden of a difficult time for a loved one.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of difficult to think of, because none of us want to really admit we're not going to be here forever. We tend to put that in the back of our mind as far as we can put it and leave it there until something brings it to the forefront. And the same for our loved ones. You deal with this on a continual basis. What kind of mindset do you have to get into to be able to deal with so many people who are at end of life and their families? It's a difficult time for them, obviously, for the reasons that you would imagine. But then you're on a daily basis dealing with people who are passing through for a very short time, usually in hospice. They don't stay, maybe, 4, 5, 6 months?
Yes.
And you can count whether that's fortunate or unfortunate based on the situation of the person. But how do you get into that mindset of these are the people that I want to help?
So all of our patients and their families come to with different baselines. They come with us with maybe a few days, maybe a few months. Sometimes the palliative care doctors have spoken with them and have given them an actual timeline. In our case, we just want to make sure the families and the patients get exactly what they need, so they're not repeating themselves, going back into the hospital, getting extra tests, those things that are just they've done for quite some time. Rewarding in the fact that they don't have to make these ventures back out into their specialists, their family doctors. They can actually allow our nurse to communicate with them to get the best level of care. And in these days and these times that we live in, being at home is the number one reason why folks come on to hospice services.
And Lacey, you're actually out in the field.
Yes.
Dealing with the patients. Before we talk about the actual services and stuff, how do you deal with it yourself emotionally? We try and give a professional degree of care as a physician. We did as a nurse. You do, but surely that has some impact on you personally. How do you deal with that?
It does, and I tell when patients ask me that and their families, I normally say, I get close to some, but not to all. I don't know what makes us get close to some and not to all, other than our own protection of ourselves, if you will, because if I got close to everyone, there's just no way I could do it. So you maintain that professionalism. Some of them are in your heart just a little more than others.
But you do get close to these patients while you're while they're in this hospice program.
Absolutely, yes.
There's no way you can't.
And there actually is a point where, as the patient transitions to end of life, where you are there more for the family than you are for the patient. And if the patient has come on soon enough, you've developed a rapport with that family, and they consider you a comfort to them at that time.
Yeah, well, I think that's something that we want to explore as we go on here.
It's The Buzz with Dr. Z. I'm Doug Herendeen from WRTA. Dr. George Lupko is with the Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania, and we're talking about hospice care today. We have Don Martin from 365 Hospice Care. Sir, your corporate is Carrolltown, but you're a little more local than that?
We are. It's State College, Pennsylvania, 1315 West College Avenue.
Okay. And Lacey Carfley is a registered nurse who works with 365 Hospice. By the way, their website is 365hospice.com if you're interested in that. And Dr. Zlupko?
Well, we were talking when we ended the last segment, we were talking with Lacey about how she personally deals with this. But the one thing I wanted to get across is this philosophy business about hospice, because many patients, many families really don't understand. They think by going to hospice, you're giving up. That's kind of the mental gyration they go through, that we're giving up somehow, that their loved one is not going to get some kind of care that they should be getting. And it's really just the opposite. It really is very much the opposite. If you guys want to expand on that, that's fine. But I'm just saying, usually, and from my observation, and I've been close to 365 for some time now, that the patients actually get more attention than I think they would if they were just going to the regular doctor, you know, visits every month or two.
That's absolutely true.
You know, they're being seen weekly, sometimes daily, mm-hmm. Depending on their circumstance. Lacey, tell us about the kind of service that you would provide like that. When someone is on our service, when someone's on the hospice service, what kind of things are going on for them?
So like Dawn mentioned, it's a team approach. So not only do you have the nurses who are coming in usually at least twice a week when the patients are stable, we're checking your vitals and we're talking about comfort and the medications that you're taking and whether they're working to manage your pain, your anxiety, things like constipation, insomnia. It's not just pain. Your respiratory status, you know, is the oxygen working for you? And then you have the home health aides who go in 2 to 3 times a week. They help you shower and dress. They'll put lotion on you. They'll give you a massage. They'll do basically whatever you would like to make you feel more comfortable. We also have our chaplain who will come in several times a month, pray with you, discuss any concerns you have about end of life. We have our medical social worker who assists families with obtaining resources to help in the home when hospice is not in the home, whether that be through private pay caregivers or assistance with applying through, say, Medicaid for government assistance with caregivers.
Right. Well, so I think the viewer or the listeners can hear and can see that the services provided to someone on hospice care, we're not taking anything away from them. Hospice care doesn't take anything away from them, doesn't take their medicines away from them, doesn't take any services away from them, and actually provides not only more services for them, but for the families as well. And I think that's an important concept to understand. And when, unfortunately, the kind of patients that I've seen in the past with lung cancers and such, we've had to refer them for hospice care. And then I've also been honored to review many of the patients the 365 has and talk about their care. I can see that the patients who are on hospice are not giving up anything. They're not giving up anything at all. They're just being cared for in a more humane, I think, way.
Absolutely. Everything comes to them instead of them having to go out. You know, if there is an infection, it's treated with antibiotics. We're contacting the doctor. Basically, everything that is not, you know, extensive testing can be done in the home. We can even do x-rays in the home. If there's a fall and there's pain, we can have the x-ray technician come to the home. So, no, you're absolutely right. Nothing is taken away. It's only added to.
Don, can you tell us a little bit about how you interact with the families? I know that, and we've talked about this before, that you've talked to the husband of a wife who's dying, or the wife of a husband who's dying, or the children. What kind of interactions do you have, and what kind of questions, for example, do family members have when their loved one is on hospice? What do you deal with there?
Yeah, a very good question. I meet with 400 or 500 families every year. And of those families, some of the first questions when I meet with them, how much does it cost? Certainly, it's covered through Medicare, Medicaid. Private insurances take on the hospice benefit. So that's usually never a problem. In addition to that, the other questions are the medications, which ones are covered, which aren't. Primarily based on the individual's diagnosis. The patient has a certain diagnosis he come on with, some primary and secondary diagnosis. We'll cover those medications accordingly. Equipment. Some folks just don't have what it takes to keep the folks comfortable at home, everything from a hospital bed to an oxygen concentrator, bed wedges, everything is covered in our services. This keeps the families very comfortable at home, not having to worry about going back to the emergency room for anything extra. The biggest question, though, most families, how soon should I get started? We take a big approach on getting started much sooner rather than later. This avoids those trips back and forth to the hospital, those unneeds. Families, to this day, and all the hundreds of families and thousands I've met with, none of them say they wish it had got started later. It's always they wish it would have got started a lot sooner.
Do I take it then in what the service at 365 offers, it's more in-home than in an actual nursing facility?
It's both. Yeah.
It is both.
40% home, I would say the other 60% personal care and skilled nursing facilities, yes.
Have you seen a change in that over the years where it used to be more of one and less of the other than it is now?
Yes, especially.
Yeah, I think there are far more people at home now following COVID. After they had to go through that period of time where they could not see their loved ones, they couldn't talk to them, touch them, I think a lot more people are staying home.
Lacey's very correct. There was too much of that where folks had to wave through their through windows to their loved ones in skilled nursing facilities and personal care homes. And that left a bad taste in everyone, knowing that they couldn't be there for their end of life. So even though end of life providers such as ourselves were allowed in the buildings, the families were not.
Yeah, I find that to be horrific, and I cannot imagine having to go through something like that.
And one of the benefits was that if hospice said they were near death, then the families were permitted to visit.
Here's the thing, though. There are some things you just can't do at home. You need a skilled nursing facility to carry out some of that. Do you ever see a day where that's not going to be the case, where everything could be done, or at least 80% could be done at home versus the way it is now? Or I'm just not seeing the practicality of it being as convenient as we would like it to be just based on medical technology and knowledge.
With hospice, most of the complicated procedures have already been completed. They're tired of that. They don't want the IVs. They don't want the x-rays, the complicated medications. So I would say 99% of what we need to do on hospice can be done at home quite efficiently.
Yeah, and I'll amplify on that. I think most patients who come to hospice have already experienced these in-hospital procedures. It's not that, if something really dire happens, that they can't have a procedure of some sort, but the whole concept here is that we're trying to make their last few months of life as comfortable as possible, as humane as possible, relieve pain, relieve suffering, provide them with what nutrition they can have, medications that they need, but we're not curing their problem at this point in time. We're helping them through the journey of life to its ultimate conclusion.
Is it possible to have home care if you don't have a relative? There's a lot of what they refer to as elder orphans now. They don't have kids around. They don't have other family members available, or perhaps people have aged out and they may be the last in their family or the only one, say, for 1,000 miles. can you do hospice care 100% under that circumstance if there isn't somebody there who is a family member that is looking out for them or caring at other times?
That's where our team steps in, and our medical social worker works with the patient, and most times they'll have a power of attorney. That power of attorney may not be able to provide care, so the social worker will work with them to set up caregivers. Sometimes we assist them with being admitted into a facility. That's sometimes the only safe and effective option. But we do everything we can to try to keep them in their home safely.
And people will wonder about this, which is less expensive, especially if somebody is using Medicaid, Medicare, et cetera. What is a more economical solution? Is it better to be able to keep somebody in their home as opposed to be in a facility or...
Yes, definitely at home. Personal care are the least expensive of the two. Skilled nursing facilities are much more expensive for families when they pay out of pocket. It's about half, actually, personal care versus skilled nursing facilities. But staying in the home, what gets costly is private duty care.
And what's the difference between hospice and that?
Private duty is something done outside of the scope of what hospice can do or will do. This is around-the-clock care, somebody actually being with the individual when family members are absent.
Yeah, because I know somebody that went through a situation where a nurse came in twice a day to take care of her. She was in a wheelchair. She couldn't get around by herself, would take care of her in the morning, come back in the evening. And that was not 24-hour care, but it was probably as close to what you're describing here in this type of hospice. Although she technically was not in hospice, her death was unexpected. It's a long, sad story. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to share here. But the point was she did not, at the time, seem to need 24-hour care, and she mm-hmm. didn't have it. But that was a decision that was made by her being of sound mind. And the family members in who could not provide the care that the nurse coming in twice a day did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, right. Whatever situation the patient is in, the hospice service can adapt to that.
Right.
Again, the preference generally for most families is to be at home. There's no question about that. But there are circumstances where the patient must be in some other kind of care facility.
Yeah.
And we don't stand against that, you know, at 365. We certainly would actually help them do that if mm-hmm. it was necessary. Okay, so the focus is on the patient themselves and what they need and what they need at this particular time of life, and that's an important thing to understand.
Well, we have just a second or two till we have to do a break here, but I wanted to ask you, Dr. Zlupko, when you have dealt with some of your patients who you see them going in this direction where it's going to be a hospice or end of life or palliative care. Where do you make the decision? I suppose it's different for everybody, but where do you or other healthcare providers have to make the decision, okay, it's time to get somebody involved here? You talk with the patient first or the family or what?
Usually I talk to the patient first and find out whether or not they understand that their problem now is not treatable, that the medications or the chemotherapy or the radiation therapy or whatever they were getting is no longer going to be effective because their problem has gone beyond those therapies. And so they are now in a situation where the real care they need is to relieve any suffering they're having, if they're in pain, shortness of breath, to make sure that they have at least some nourishment, hydration, things like that. And also to try and rally support around them from the family and their friends so that they understand what the circumstance is and just make the best of the situation that you can.
On Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA, The Buzz with Dr. Z, Dr. George Zlupko, supported by the Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania. Before we continue with the topic this particular month, and we're on once a month, the third Tuesday of each month at 2, there's something else that the foundation does. It's a black lung clinic, and if you could explain a little bit about what
sure,
that
Doug,
is.
Sure, Doug. I'd be glad to do that. Thank you very much for reminding me. The Lung Disease Foundation has a fairly nice grant from the U.S. Department of Labor, and we evaluate either former or current coal workers, and we can do this actually for co-workers all over the United States, actually in 41 counties of Pennsylvania. And we've gotten folks all the way from the hard-cold regions up in Lycoming County and up in, around Scranton and such. And we also get them from some of our southern counties as well, Somerset and whatnot. And these evaluations are free. You get a chest x-ray, there's an EKG, there's pulmonary function studies, all of this. We send in reports to the Department of Labor about this. You can come back and forth if you do not have any evidence of significant black lung disease. You're welcome to come back in an interval, usually in a year or two, for a reassessment. Once again, the evaluation is free. Your travel expenses, if you're coming from a little bit of a distance, are also covered. And if you're interested in this particular service that the foundation has, I'm going to ask you to call the number that I'm going to give you right now. It's 814-800-2309. That's 814-800-2309. And that's the Black Lung Clinic at the, actually it's the Lung Disease Center, but it's the Lung Disease Foundation. We're embedded in that center. And one of the secretaries there and one of the workers will be glad to take your name and tell you what's involved.
Now, that number went by too fast. Understand we do have a podcast of the program, and you don't have to listen to the whole thing just to find the number. It will be listed on the podcast page, but you'll also be able to listen to this program again later. If you there's somebody that you would want to hear about hospice as we're talking about it today, you'll find it at WRTA.com and also on Dr. Zlupko's site, and maybe 365 Hospice Care would be sharing that as well. By the way, their website is 365hospice.com. And Don Martin is with them, and so is RN Lacey Carfley. And
well, Don, I wanted to ask you, it seems to me that nurses and folks like yourself working in a hospice program, where do you get people to do that? I mean, how do you get people to be involved? Is everybody on the payroll? How do you get them interested in this? Are there any volunteers that are involved? Just let's get a little idea about that.
Sure. Our volunteers come. A lot of folks come in because they need credits through their college courses. They'll come in to volunteer in the summertime. Usually it's a seasonal. We do have year-round volunteers.
Are these nursing students or what kind of students?
These
are
folks on their way into healthcare administration and also nursing students, yes.
Okay. All right. Yes.
So they're finding those credits very valuable. The volunteer effort is understanding more about the program itself. In addition, nurses. We could always have more applicants with nursing care. Our corporate office, 814-419-4901. Anytime you folks would want to come in to fill out an application, you can get on also our website, as Doug had mentioned. Certainly, we're always about hiring more folks and more qualified candidates for the nursing position. Home health aides, chaplains, medical social workers, we have quite a few over our 21-county range. As far east as Juniata County, as far west as Washington County out near Pittsburgh. So,
wow, many, so you cover, yeah, cover.
Yeah, how many facilities do you have?
Facilities, we have four regional offices, and we, in each one of those counties, 21 counties, we have regional, local nurses for each location.
Corporate is Carrolltown, and you've got a facility in State College.
State College.
Where else?
One in Monroeville as well.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Lacey, the thing that gets me is I'm always, and I know some people who have nurses in their families. We in this country, we have a shortage of nurses, but at the same time, we have the greater need now more than ever. How do you square that? I mean, in some cases, I know one particular situation where this woman is very apparently competent, and she keeps getting offered better jobs and better jobs and, you know, moves on from wherever she was. Some of them, she wasn't too thrilled with them. Some of them, she's sorry to go, but hey, this is a better situation for her family.
That's actually the best part about going into nursing, is finding your niche. As I said, I have tried multiple different, you know, genres of nursing prior to coming to hospice. And after being in the nursing career for 15 years, finally found my niche. So, yes, I would say that hospice is not for everyone, but those who love it deeply, and their heart is in it. If it is not for you, then there's no shame in that.
Yeah, you said earlier that it's where your heart lies. Mm-hmm. What led you to that decision?
This is the first nursing job that I have had where I feel like I'm truly helping. Families are experiencing their absolute worst times. They are losing a loved one, or they're, we're teaching them about a disease process at which time they realize they're losing a loved one. We deal with denial. We deal with anger. You get so close to these people and they learn to trust you, and that is such a reward. And if you can make someone feel better during the worst time of their life, there is just nothing more satisfying than that.
Yeah, so I think, Don, you're always looking for folks, right? You're always looking for
absolutely
people.
Yes.
And Doug, what was that website again?
365hospice.com.
Yeah, I would think that anybody who's in the market who has listened to this broadcast today.
There is a contact button on the page that I noticed there if
yeah.
you are interested in signing up or volunteering.
Yeah, or yes. volunteering. So, yeah, I would encourage anybody who has been impressed and taken by this program to give them a call. Because they're always looking for folks, either nurses or other ancillary personnel, and even some volunteers if you just feel that you need to do that. There's always a need.
And we'll have that link on the website, also on the podcast page, if you want to check it there.
So, Don, you were saying that 365, though, has a substantial amount of counties that it services, correct?
That's correct, yes. In our local or our corporate office, there's 8 counties involved. In our state college office, there are actually 7 counties involved. Monroeville takes on the rest of those remaining counties out west. And as I said earlier, the nurses are actually designed so they're close by the patients in each of those counties. They're not traveling from county to county to get to their next location. We personally, being a family-owned and operated company, make sure that these folks need that attention sooner rather than later when the calls are made. So, yes.
Do you only deal with people that are within your service? In other words, if they're in another long-term care facility or hospice facility, do you come into that, or is that just for your particular facilities and to people's homes?
I think there may be some confusion. We do not have any hospice facilities. We just have offices where our staff can, function from.
Okay.
And then as far as facilities go, I don't think there's a local hospice house, if you would.
No, I think up in Scranton, Pennsylvania, there might be the closest
right.
one by.
So we would be going into the long-term care facilities, the personal care homes, and the homes.
Yeah, I know in some instances there are healthcare systems in this area and other parts of the state, and I'm sure across the country, to do the same thing where they have people specific to their healthcare system that are a part of that.
Yeah.
And in some cases, they have other people coming in that are partnered with that particular facility.
Right. We contract with certain facilities. And is it each year, Don, that those contracts are renewed?
They're annual contracts, correct, yeah.
Yeah, so I think maybe in our next segment, maybe we can get into that just a little bit more about the scope of this particular agency, and we've already talked about some of the services they provide. I think it's pretty obvious what they're doing. But if the viewer or the listeners here are outside of, say, Blair County,
yeah,
I mean, this
and
isn't
the,
just
or a, they have relatives outside of the
exactly.
area.
Yeah, this isn't just
need.
A local
right. issue,
a local thing. This is regional. I think I said that in my
yeah.
promo. You know, this is local, but also a regional service.
It's The Buzz with Dr. Z, Dr. George Lupko, supported by the Lung Disease Foundation of Central Pennsylvania, and we're talking hospice care. This is a little different from what we talk about on the program monthly, usually, but this is something Dr. Z thought that.
I thought this might be,
people.
Yeah.
And I think so. Like I said, we put these things in the back of our mind, but someday
well,
it might help to know.
I just know that every time the holiday season rolls around, And this is a family thing that happened to us. There always seems to be something untoward that happens to someone, and bad news comes, and it's a time of year when you don't expect it or you don't want it, certainly. And hospice can be a real help in this regard. There's a couple of things I wanted to talk about again. Lacey, you brought up something just a minute ago. Why don't you go ahead with that?
Okay. So when most people think of hospice, they think of things like cancer. You know, you're not getting chemo anymore. But there are very many more diagnoses and situations, actually, where your loved one would meet criteria. Have they been hospitalized frequently? Have they had infections? Are they losing weight? Were they able to ambulate and now they're wheelchair bound? You know, there are diagnoses in addition to cancer that it would be a primary diagnosis that people wouldn't think of, such as anorexia. Is mom no longer eating? Things like malnutrition. Are they eating but they aren't gaining any weight? Just a general decline where they don't want to seek any further treatment. There are criteria that Medicare sets that all hospices have to meet. And when you come onto hospice, the RN will come out and evaluate you. And if you meet those criteria, you are brought on that same day. So all it takes is a doctor's order and some signing some consents with Dawn. And we often bring people on within a few hours of hearing from them.
Now, I know, just to interject, I know that a lot of cases a social worker is going to be of great help at that juncture with you, working with you on that side of it and working with the family or the patient on that side, because the average person is going to sit there, I'm completely lost in this. What do you mean I have to, okay, we've decided I need to go into hospice. I can't pay for this, or I mm-hmm. don't know what I'm doing here, or how do I, the social worker can come in at that point.
And also the hospice agency itself. I mean, Don here is part of that process, so they can offer the patient and the family the knowledge that they have of taking care of many, many patients. You know, sometimes the social workers, God love them, we have to have them, don't always know the exact intricacies of some of these services.
They can usually help facilitate only to a certain extent, and the service has to take it from there, and so does the family on their end.
But, right. And with no strings attached, Dawn can do an informational session, and sometimes the families like it when a nurse or another team member is present. So without a doctor's order, even if you're just interested in it and have questions, we can come to your home and talk to you about it.
Yeah. So when would be a good time to start thinking about going into hospice? When should the family, when should the patient actually think about doing this?
You want to go ahead, Doug?
Yeah, when you're seeing your personal care physician, or if you just aren't a regular goer of the medical field and you're not going to your doctors quite often, but you're starting to see a lot of transition, maybe a couple recent emergency room stays, those are the kinds of times that you might want to call in and just find out more about your situation. We can come out and address that.
Wouldn't you say, though, if the patient or the family does this early in the course of events, it's better than waiting till the last week or so that, you know, dad just is unconscious at home or something
Absolutely.
Like that. I mean,
absolutely,
And if you don't meet criteria the first time, we'll come back again. And there may be just the slightest change that makes you meet that criteria and you can be brought on.
Well, now, 365, how does that differ from some of these organizations that are owned by large corporations or these various equity firms and things like that? How's 365 differ from that?
It differs in quite a few ways. There are some hospitals that have their own hospices. Granted, you're only allowed to go 60 minutes or 60 miles away from that location. Being that we have three different locations throughout Pennsylvania, we were within 60 minutes or 60 miles of any of those locations. So we're not confined to one hospital setting or a 60-mile radius. So access is the biggest part of it. I think families also look at it as a separation of going back and forth to the hospital and having their own services that they can tailor-made. Everything that we do is individually geared towards that patient and that family.
We're a small family-owned company. The family lives right among our patients in the community. And we don't have to answer to those big corporations who make everything black and white. There are special, you know, circumstances that can occur, and our small company can attest to that.
I know of a facility in another part of Pennsylvania that had been there for decades. I guess it was built in the 60s, and it was privately owned or operated. And in just the past 10 years, they've changed hands and names four times.
Yes. Yeah.
And I don't have personal experience of anything recent, but I've heard it's not for the better.
Yes.
And it seems like there are some companies that are just trading these facilities like poker chips.
Yeah. Well, in this particular case, there are teams of folks. There's a continuity of care that occurs. You know, when Lacey sees someone, there are some other caregivers that she may be working with that are seeing that same patient. And there's kind of a team approach.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like you're seeing someone this time and then someone who doesn't know you the next time,
yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera. And the fact that they have these locations, I don't know if Don was real clear about that,
yeah.
But these hubs, you have to be within 60 miles of them. So, for example, if we had somebody here in the Altoona Hospital, UPMC, mm-hmm. but they lived 60 miles from UPMC, if UPMC had its own hospice service there here in Altoona, they wouldn't be able to really deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
They would have to go somewhere else where they wouldn't be known, where if you have these various hubs, they're able to take that patient if it's 60 miles away because they have a hub that's in that catchment area.
And that's how we're able to service 21 counties.
Yeah, so 21 counties. So like I say, they have a regional service, but it's also – or I mean a local service, but it's also regional.
We have just a few minutes left here. Is there anything that we have not touched on that you feel would be useful to the public to know, some aspect that we have not had a chance to address enough?
Well, you know, Don, I'd like you to say if someone has an interest, if they have a patient, if they have a family member interested in perhaps the hospice service, how would they get a hold of you?
Absolutely. Call into our corporate office at, again, 814-419-4901. There's plenty of folks there that will take your call. And again, that's 814-419-4901. Certainly we'll gear you to the right folks, come out and see you folks and get with your physicians and make sure that we're in touch.
Okay. And that website for them is, again,
365hospice.com.
All right. So
and that'll also be on the podcast.
Okay, great.
It's on the page there.
So listen, before we finish up, okay, I'd like to just switch gears again and just re-mention the Black Lung Program that we have at the Lung Disease Foundation. It's an important program for this area and for the coal workers that need this kind of service, and it's a free service. If you call us at 814-800-2309, we can arrange for a free evaluation that includes a chest x-ray, pulmonary function studies, blood gases, EKG, and then an actual visit by a physician, either myself or one of the other physicians that service that. And if you have been found by these studies to have significant black lung disease, which is impairing your function, we can then refer you on for the usual help, legal help that you might need at that time.
All right. So that's something people should keep in mind. And it's interesting because I talk to people who are from this area and they say, oh, we don't have anybody affected by that anymore. And I'm thinking, it wasn't that long ago when there were far more, and there still are.
Yes, there are. And by the way, just of interest, you know, I write these articles for the local paper here.
Yeah.
And one that's going to be coming out will be a type of pneumoconiosis, which is a lung disease caused by inhalation of industrial dusts, that's modern age. It's with something called beryllium, and it's found in nuclear energy workers and aerospace workers and whatnot. So these types of illnesses, these types of diseases due to inhalation of industrial dusts are not just diseases of the past. We actually have a modern component to it.
All right. That's something to keep in mind. And to Don Martin and to Lacey Carfley again, anything else to add? If people are more interested in this, they can contact you. But Lacey, one final pitch. If people want to become involved in, if they're an RN and they're looking to do something that they feel would be more, I guess you put it, you felt most useful doing this, what would you say to them?
I would say give it a shot. Come and talk to us. You can shadow with us. There may be scuttlebutt of a sign-on bonus. But most importantly, caring for these people is important work, and it is near and dear to me.
And I was just wondering, how many employees do you have throughout the company, Don?
About 125.
All right. Moderate size company and 125 and looking for more. Don Martin is with 365 Hospice Care. RN Lacey Carfley is with them as well. Folks, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Us.
I really appreciate it. I'll see you again. We usually see each other maybe once a month or so, or once every 2 weeks or so. So it's really good to see you again.
Thank you.
And we have Dr. George Lupko, The Buzz with Dr. Z, a podcast of this program up at WRTA.com and on his website. And the next time we'll talk will be Tuesday, December 16th.
All right, Doug. Good to see you. Happy to be here always. And have a good Thanksgiving.